This is number 0002, the Stuff File podcast with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's radio that doesn't fly through the air. Coming from your computer and right into your ear, it's the Stuff File podcast with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and this is indeed the Stuff File Podcast, edition 0002. And coming up on this week's edition, the one-hour program, we'll talk to a fellow by the name of Steve Gilman, and he has a website called unusualwaystomakemoney.com. Would you like to smell someone else's pits?
For example, an odor judger, someone who actually smells the underarms of people to see how well different deodorants work. Not a job I'm sure I would want.
Jason Pefley is the creator of the website regretfulmorning.com. It would seem that most guys just have sordid stories to share.
Just sitting around with a couple buddies one night, we were telling stories, and then I was like, you know, I bet there's other guys like us who, you know, sit around the campfire and talk like this and would be down to have a platform to share stories like this.
We'll also check the mailbag.
Incoming subspace signal.
And we'll have a visit from Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation.
Hey, look, I'll answer a lot of questions for you, but there's one question I'm not going to answer for you, unless, of course, you're with the IRS. Don't ask me how much money I make. It's none of your business. Hi, this is Steve Walsh. You know, your guy in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. You're going to want to stick around for my two-minute tirade. It's coming up later on, right here, on the podcast with Peter Anthony Holder.
That's all coming up on the second edition of the Stuff File podcast with me, Peter Anthony Holder. And, of course, there's lots of stuff coming your way. We'll get to that in just a moment. By the way, at the beginning of the program, there's something in the biz we call a slate. That's what someone mentions at the top of the show. This is show number whatever it is. And I've decided that each week we do the show, I'm going to have somebody else do the slate. So the first week, I did the slate, 0001. This week, it's a lady by the name of Jessica. And I don't even know her last name. She works at MissouriNet with Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. And she was nice enough to do the slate for us for the second edition. So each week, we'll get somebody else to do the slate for us. We'll see how that works out. Anyway, we'll get to Steve a little later on the program. But right now, you want to hear the Stuff File. So let's get to it right away. And we start off with a story that takes place in Croydon, South London. 102-year-old Winnie Langley has finally decided to stop smoking. After 95 years, she had her very first cigarette in 1914 and has smoked an average of 5 a day ever since. That works out, boys and girls, to more than 170,000 smokes during her lifetime. So why quit now? Winnie says she simply doesn't like it anymore. Boy, she gets fickle in her old age, I guess. Ironically, her doctors have told her there's not much point in stopping now, according to her grandson, Clive. And, of course, this is a story from Britain. Where else would you find somebody named Clive? The doctors said if she's reached the age where she's 102 without getting cancer, I don't think she ever will. So, there you go. After 95 years, she's quitting. So it's never too late, apparently. Well, actually, it can be too late. But you know what I'm saying. Moving right along, we go to Huron Township, Michigan. Police said a dispute over manure, I could say something here, but I won't, led to a man firing his shotgun near his neighbors and police later using a taser to subdue him. The Saginaw News reported that the man approached his neighbors in Huron County's Huron Township, about 110 miles north of Detroit, as they spread lime and manure on their farm. Now, police said the 45-year-old fired his shotgun and then aimed the gun at the couple as they approached the fence with their tractor. Authorities said the disagreement over the placement of the manure has been ongoing. Officers responded and a taser was used to subdue the suspect, who was held in the county jail pending charges. I know you're all writing your own punchline for this one, so I'll just let you have a moment amongst yourselves to figure this out, and I'll move along, okay? Are you done? Good. Okay. We found perhaps the dumbest scientist in the world. And by the way, this doesn't make the idiot of the day. We have an idiot of the day later in the program. As a matter of fact, As a special treat, we have two. But I digress. This idiot scientist is from Kazakhstan, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name because it's like an eye chart. But anyway, he held a press conference and announced that he has cured AIDS by injecting people with perfume. And he added, it has to be an expensive perfume. Of course, doctors everywhere have condemned the treatment, including the head of Kazakhstan's Center for AIDS, or the Center Against AIDS, who said, quote, it is illegal. Injecting perfume in the blood could harm not only HIV patients, but also any healthy person. So just to be clear on this, to make sure you understand this, perfume does not cure AIDS, and injecting it into somebody is not only dangerous, it's potentially fatal. So if you have perfume and a syringe, don't put the two together, okay? Okay, on to Istanbul. A Turkish woman accused of cutting her lover's penis off, ouch, must wait 18 months for a verdict and sentencing while the court determines whether his reattached penis still functions. Now, why this is even an issue, she cut it off, she's guilty, send her to jail. The criminal court in the Black Sea town of Trabzon will wait for a medical report assessing whether the 28-year-old victim has regained full use of his organ or if he is permanently disabled. To determine which crime was committed, we first need the reports, the sources said. We'll continue holding hearings in the trial from time to time until we receive a report. The 39-year-old defendant faces between 1 and 3 years in prison if her lover, or I should say former lover, because, you know, these two aren't lovers anymore. Actually, he's not a lover with anybody anymore, but I digress. Anyway, the 39-year-old defendant faces between 1 and 3 years in prison if her former lover recovers. She will be jailed for at least 8 years if he does not. The woman told the court that he had broken his promise to marry her and forced her into prostitution and beat her. Surgeons worked for 11 hours to reattach the penis in an operation which they described as successful and said full sexual function should return within 6 months. The defendant, who has not been jailed during the trial, told the court that she cut off her former lover's penis and threw it onto the roof of a neighboring building while he was drunk. You know, he'd kind of have to be? Yeah. Anyway, do you watch television shows like Big Brother? This is another story that comes, ironically, from Turkey, which deals with a Big Brother program, or a pseudo-Big Brother program. As you know, Big Brother television shows are literally all over the world. And there is one, apparently, in Istanbul, or maybe not. 9 women tricked into thinking they were reality TV show contestants and lured into an Istanbul villa were rescued by Turkish military police after 2 months' confinement. Cameras in the villa filmed the women 24 hours a day, providing a live stream of images for internet users who had paid to access the footage. The women, all from Turkey, had answered an advertisement seeking contestants for a Big Brother-style television show. They passed an audition and selection process before entering the house. The women's parents called the police after they didn't hear anything from any one of them. The military police went to investigate and heard the women screaming from inside, a spokesperson said, adding that the raid took place a week ago Monday. Police determined 3 men and prosecutors are investigating. According to Turkish media, the women had signed a contract agreeing that they would have no contact with their families and would face a fine of 50,000 Turkish dollars or lira if they had left early. Wow, isn't that very similar to the contracts that legitimate reality television shows actually make people pay or sign? I don't know. And finally, in the first section of the Stuff File, here on the Stuff File podcast, let's talk a little bit about modern technology. You know, things are moving faster and faster and faster. You can download this podcast. People can listen to it anytime they want. You can get email in a second. It seems everything is moving quickly. You can use a telephone to call people around the world on a cellular. Isn't technology grand? Or maybe not. A South African information technology company on Wednesday proved it was faster for them to transmit data with a carrier pigeon than by sending it using Telkom, which is the country's leading internet service provider. And you know how I feel about pigeons. They're just rats with wings. Internet speed and connectivity in Africa's largest economy is poor because of a bandwidth shortage. It's also very expensive. A local news agency reported the 11-month-old pigeon named Winston, we even have the age of the pigeon, can you believe that? Took 1 hour and 8 minutes to fly the 80 kilometers from Unlimited IT's offices to the coastal city of Durban with a data card that was strapped to his leg. Now, including downloading, the transfer took 2 hours, 6 minutes, and 57 seconds, the time it took for only 4% of the data to be transferred using a Telkom line. I had a dial-up that was that slow. That was like 15 years ago. The news agency said Unlimited IT performed the stunt after becoming frustrated with slow internet transmission times. The company has 11 call centers around the country and regularly sends data to its other branches. Telkom could not immediately be reached for comment, I guess because it takes a lot of time for stuff to get in and out of Telkom. Internet speed is expected to improve once a new 17,000-kilometer underwater fiber optic cable linking southern and east Africa to other networks becomes operational before South Africa hosts the Soccer World Cup, which is next year. Local service providers are currently negotiating deals for more bandwidth. So if you're sending emails to somebody in Johannesburg, don't hold your breath. Okay. Coming up, we have a lot of things to talk about on the Stuff File podcast, including Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. And we'll meet a guy who has a website called regretfulmorning.com. Plus, we'll check the mailbag. But right now, I want to talk about something a little different, dealing with ways that you can make money. There's money to be made at really, really odd jobs. Though the mainstream job market is suffering, Steve Gilman of UnusualWaysToMakeMoney.com says there are still plenty of weird ways to make cash, and he's on the line with us right now. First up, Steve, I understand that you had several odd jobs yourself. Is that how this site came to be?
Yes, that was part of it. I had to make a couple websites on different topics, and my wife and I had both had different jobs. I'd been a repo man, and we'd been selling rocks recently and walking sticks, so yeah, we decided to make a website on the idea of unusual ways to make money.
You were selling rocks?
Yeah, we were doing flea markets and selling anything and everything, and we had unusual rocks we had collected from traveling all over the country, and we actually sold them at craft shows more than flea markets. People bought them to then glue things on them and sell them at their own craft show.
How did you end up in a situation where you were dealing with odd jobs in the first place?
Well, I had many jobs all of my life, primarily because I don't like jobs. So I guess, I went through them fairly quickly and had a lot of different ones. My wife and I wanted a business then that we could take with us wherever we moved to, and the internet seemed to fit that. So we started a website.
Do you think in this day and age, with more and more people actually losing their jobs, that the opportunity to make money in what would be considered before as odd jobs is even greater than it was before?
Oh, yeah. It absolutely is greater. I mean, I have a friend, for example, who tells me, talk about strange ways to make money, that he can sell his online character in World of Warcraft for $700 or $800 if he wants to tomorrow, and then build a new character and sell that. And, you know, I don't know if you've heard of online games like Second Life, but people are actually selling virtual real estate for real money in these games. Go buy a house in this virtual world for $200 or $300, and of course somebody in the game had to play long enough to build the gold coins to buy that. And those are obviously unusual ways that are, you know, just from recent times.
Selling virtual real estate and money, isn't that what Bernie Madoff went to jail for?
That could be. Well, I guess the problem was he didn't tell people they weren't getting something real.
So on your site, which is unusualwaystomakemoney.com, what are some of the more unusual jobs? And have you been surprised, you being someone who has had a few unusual jobs, are you surprised by the variety of jobs that are out there that would be, for lack of a better term, on the fringe?
Yeah, I've been surprised by some of them. For example, an odor judger, someone who actually smells the underarms of people to see how well different deodorants work. Not a job I'm sure I would want. A chicken sexer, that's one that was covered by Mike Rowe on Dirty Jobs. And you basically all day long turn over little baby chicks and squeeze them to look at their parts and see if they're male or female, and then you sort them out. And human guinea pigs is another one. Doing medical experiments for money.
What kind of money are we talking about that people make in some of the odd jobs, and what would be the surprises as far as some of the more lucrative odd jobs or bizarre jobs out there?
Well, I was a little bit surprised that some of the human guinea pig jobs are actually pretty lucrative, because I had heard about the ones where you're paid a small stipend and you are put on a special diet, or you try a particular drug for a while. But some of the human guinea pig jobs where have to do more intrusive things, like the testing asthma equipment where you have to have a tube down your throat for several weeks. Some of those were paying as high as $3,000 a week when I researched that. That surprised me. A furniture tester, on the other hand, probably doesn't pay well, but sitting in a lazy boy chair to test it sounds like a decent job for them, whatever money they pay.
So exactly how does your site work?
My site, as in terms of making money for us, you mean?
No, how do people use it? I mean, do people add jobs to it? I understand there's a newsletter, for instance.
Well, there's a newsletter, and every week the newsletter goes out so people can, read about unusual ways to make money. Some people do it for entertainment. Some have actually taken the suggestions and gone with it, and I get emails back from them. And, of course, if I get an email back from somebody on a new way, I include it on the site. Most recently, 2 days ago, somebody had written me to say that they make money when they travel on vacation, because apparently there's a website now where you can find people in your area that want packages delivered, but or a piece of furniture or something that where they don't want to pay a trucking rate, and they'll pay you to take it if it's on your route. And so that's another unusual way that's just come up.
Now again, when I think of that latter one, I think of all the things that can go wrong. You could suddenly find yourself unwittingly becoming a drug mule or something.
That's entirely possible. I suppose you'd have to be careful. I actually flew as a courier once and had several suitcases with me. And, I was going to South America and wondering what I'm carrying in the suitcases, but they actually did let me check and look through the suitcases and make sure everything was perfectly legal.
Now, I understand some of the other odd jobs include such things as people who hunt for treasure in vacuum cleaner dust.
Yeah, that was an interesting one I ran into years ago, before I had the website even. There was a gentleman in California, and I read about it in a newsletter and researched it later again, but he had actually found an old movie theater that had been closed down for decades. It had closed in the 30s, and it had a thick shag rug, and they were trying to get rid of it, and he, on a hunch, took it for free to get rid of it for them and shook out of it gemstones and parts of jewelry and things, and made something like $2,000 just on all the things that were trapped deep inside this rug. And that led him to the idea of taking the vacuum cleaner bags from cleaning services and running them, I don't know if he runs them through a metal detector or what, but running them through a sorting system to pull out whatever coins and valuables he could find.
It's almost like panning for gold in vacuum cleaner bags.
Exactly, yes.
Now, one of the other ones I understand involved some guy who sold stuffed animals from thrift shops.
Yeah, my wife and I met him when we were in Arizona, and he had been unemployed for a while and was actually living out of his van, and so he went to thrift stores and said, "Can I take your stuffed animals?" and the clean ones anyhow, and sell them, and then bring the money back and pay you later. So he started out without any money at all. He actually took them from them and promised to pay later, but he found that he could make up to $4,000 a month selling them on the side of the highway in Arizona, and had bags and bags full of them in his van when we met him, and but seemed to be doing pretty well at it.
I never thought of stuffed animals being an impulse buy on the side of the road.
You know, it isn't in all areas. In that area, there's a lot of families that had recently immigrated to the area that really liked to buy their children something, and they were good impulse buys, I guess, and he sold them relatively cheaply, of course. So I guess it worked out well for him. We sold them at flea markets later. He was our inspiration to get into flea markets, and we actually did okay selling them at flea markets.
So what, again, is in the newsletter that people can get their hands on from the website?
The newsletter has unusual ways to make and save money. Of course, it has all sorts of ways that aren't so unusual, too, but I try to focus on the stranger ways. And it gets into some money philosophy issues as well. I mean, I can't have too many unusual ways every week, so I cover a lot of ground with it, but... It comes every week, and people sign up for free on the website.
And we should mention the website again is www.unusualwaystomakemoney.com. You mentioned that you have other websites, too. What other kind of websites do you have?
Well, our very first website was housesunder50,000.com, all spelled out. And that was based on our own experience. My wife and I, shortly after getting married, drove all over the country looking for a place to live. And scouting for cheap towns, and we found a little house with hardwood floors and a full basement that was half finished, and it cost us $17,000 7 years ago, that was. And that was our inspiration for the website. We decided to try to put everything we had learned about looking for cheap homes online.
Sounds like some ingenious things you have come up with in a time when you first came up with them, when they weren't probably as thought-provoking for most people as they are today, but with the economy the way it is, you're sounding more and more like the smartest man on the block.
Our timing has been fortunate.
I thank you very much, Steve, for being on the program with us.
Thank you.
Steve Gilman of UnusualWaysToMakeMoney.com. You can check out the website, and if you forget it, you can just follow the links from my website at PeterAnthonyHolder.com. This is the Stuff File Podcast.
You're listening to the Stuff File Podcast with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio that doesn't fly through the air like a communicable disease.
And still to come on the Stuff File, we'll meet the creator of RegretfulMorning.com. We'll also check the mailbag in just a matter of moments. And we still have Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Plus, there is a Stuff File Idiot of the Day. As a matter of fact, there are two. But we have more Stuff File right here, right now, and we go to London for our next story. A group of school children who reared a lamb from birth and named it Marcus has overridden objections by parents and rights activists and voted to send the animal to slaughter. Yes, Marcus, the six-month-old lamb, has now been culled. The head teacher of the primary school in Kent confirmed this story a week ago on Monday. After the school's council, a 14-member group of children age 6 to 11, voted 13 to 1 to have him killed. 13 to 1. The decision has provoked fury among animal-loving celebrities, animal and human rights campaigners, and the parents of some of the children, and led to threats against Lydd Primary School and its teachers, according to a member of the staff. Now, around 250 children at the school had taken part in the program designed to teach them how rearing and breeding animals takes place. Now, the educational farm was started this year, with Marcus being hand-fed by the children. The children also look after ducks, chickens, rabbits, and guinea pigs. The intention had been to buy pigs with the money raised from slaughtering Marcus, but those plans have been put on hold following a furor created by the lamb's culling. The school said the program may now have to be stopped. It's all up in the air, said a member of the staff. There's been so much pressure on all of us as a result of this. Now, despite that, the school says that there has been overwhelming support among the children, the staff, and most of the parents to have Marcus, a castrated male who could not have been used for breeding, sent to the slaughterhouse. But opponents branded it heartless and cruel, with animal rights campaigners asking why Marcus could not have been used to teach the children about wool. The human rights campaigners worried about the emotional impact of Marcus's death on the children. Well, let's face it, the council voted 13 to 1, so I think there's only one child we have to worry about. But I digress. A popular talk show host offered to buy the lamb and give it sanctuary, and Facebook groups sprung up to rally support to keep Marcus alive, but the children had the final say. The school defended the children's decision, calling it educational. Ever read Shirley Jackson's story, The Lottery? Anyway, when we started the farm in the spring of 2009, the aim was to educate the children in all aspects of farming life and everything that it implies, the school said in a statement. The children have had a range of opportunities to discuss this issue, but in terms of the food cycle and the ethical aspect, it is important for everyone to move on from the issue so the children can focus on their education. And I bet you Marcus was good eats, too. I sure enough do love lamb. Moving right along on the Stuff File podcast, one of the things we used to talk about on the old radio show when we did the Stuff File was dealing with people who had a little too much to drink. It's amazing how inebriated people will do incredibly stupid things. I maintain that some of the stupid things inebriated people will do, some of these folks would do if they were not inebriated, because the common term here would be stupid. But in any case, let's get to some of these stories. A drunk French teenager narrowly escaped death on Sunday, a week ago Sunday, after falling asleep on a railway track and slumbering undisturbed as a high-speed train roared over him. Now, we've had stories like this time and time and time again, where people were just so blottoed that they had no idea they were on train tracks or that a high-speed train was going over them. The vibration didn't wake them up, they didn't stir, they didn't move, and lucky for them, they didn't, because if not, they'd be dead. The 19-year-old, whose name was not released, remained fast asleep, face down on a stretch of track near Saint-Nolff in southern Brittany as the Quimper to Paris train passed over him, leaving only a few grease stains on the back of his jacket. The driver saw the body lying on the tracks and slammed on the brakes, but was only able to stop a few hundred meters further on. It was his unconscious state that saved him, really, as he lay there completely still like a dead body, said a spokesman for the local police force, adding that the clearance under the train is only about 20 centimeters. According to the spokesman, the teenager was making his way back from a music festival when he stopped to take a nap on the railway line. You have to be really, really drunk, because at what point do you think train tracks are a good place to lie down and rest? Maybe beside the train tracks might be a good place to lie down and rest, but why train tracks a good place to lie down and rest? I don't know. Anyway, that's what happened. Roused by police and firefighters who attended the scene, the young man gave a one-fingered salute before rolling over and going back to sleep. He was subsequently transferred to a nearby hospital where police say he is still recovering from his alcohol binge. He's not really aware of what happened, said a police spokesman. Is he not, or should he not be under arrest? Just asking. And speaking of drinking, a German court said a motorcyclist who collided with a drunken pedestrian during the Munich Beer Festival last year was partly to blame because she should have expected the road to be full of partygoers. I'm sorry, I'm not buying this one. Just because you know people are going to be acting like idiots doesn't give them the right to act like idiots. Anyway, the female biker, who was driving at the legal speed limit of between 40 and 50 kilometers per hour, hit a man who was crossing the road on a red light during the beer fest, which attracts millions of revelers every year. The court ruled that she was 50% responsible for the accident. Now, during the October Beer Festival, there are, as is well known to the authorities, a large number of drunk people on the streets at night who cannot always be trusted to observe the rules of the road, the court said. Again, I don't understand why they're being excused for their actions, but that's what this judge said. The motorcyclist should have adjusted her speed to be able to avoid these people. The woman was ordered to pay half the damages, which was around $3,600, and her bid of €1,000 compensation for minor injuries sustained in the accident was refused. I don't know. There's got to be some way to be able to appeal that situation, and if there's a court of appeal, I hope that woman takes the opportunity to do so. Now, speaking of people who are drinking and whatnot, when people get drunk, they do things like those last two stories I mentioned that they might not normally do or might not remember having done, totally being unaware of what they are doing. The morning after a raging party is not always pretty, as you know. Now, for those who've ever woken up in a puddle of their own vomit in a strange place, there's a website that might be helpful to you. Regretfulmorning.com provides a form where they can share their stories of drunken misbehavior and misadventure and see video and photos of other people's party fouls. Now, the creator of this website is Jason Peffley, and he's on the line with us right now. And Jason, how did you come up with the idea for this site?
I think it was just sitting around with a couple buddies one night, and we were telling stories, and then I was like, you know, I bet there's other guys like us who, you know, sit around the campfire and talk like this and would be down to have a platform to share stories like this. That's kind of how it started. That was in March of 2008. From there, it kind of snowballed into something bigger, into an actual site. And I think October of last year is when it started really, you know, growing and turning more into a college crowd type of site.
How many people are involved in putting this together?
Right now I've got an editor who helps me out, and one other writer, but I'd say probably 85% of it is still just me.
In the introduction, I mentioned the fact that a lot of the stories tend to revolve around some sort of alcoholic activity. Would that be an accurate assessment?
That would be accurate, yes.
But basically, you're looking at stuff that is the misfortunes of others, which, quite frankly, is something that this whole show sometimes is all about. So, yeah. Have you had anybody complain about it?
You know, they can't really complain. They can't really hate on me for stuff that other people write in. You know, I've seen people get their stories ripped apart by other readers and like, oh, you know, that's BS, that didn't happen, or, you know, and maybe it didn't. We don't know that. Or, oh, wow, I've done way worse than that. But for the most part, I don't get hate mail for submissions that people send in.
Now, the reason why I say most of them deal with alcohol, because there are some that don't. There was one I just took a look at not too long ago, which dealt with a bully getting his just desserts. And I'm assuming no alcohol was involved in that situation. I could be wrong.
Yeah.
But have you heard from any of the people who are actual participants? I mean, when I tell stories on the air about certain people, I'm not showing pictures. And as the saying goes, a picture shows 1,000 words or says 1,000 words. And some people who do stupid things or act stupidly think a little differently when they're visually shown.
Yeah. Are you talking about the consequences now when it does get put on the internet? Or
right.
Yeah, I mean, and some people, I've put stuff on here, you know, and not the whole site is not just reader submitted stories. That's a portion of it, but a lot of it now is articles or blog posts and stuff like that, and I've put stuff up before that people have sent me, like, you know, pictures and videos of people acting totally wasted, and those have been requested to be removed, and then, you know, I did that for them, because even though it's funny, you know, you should have the option of asking a webmaster to take it down.
Has the idea of how this is put together and what it represents changed from the time you first came up with the idea to now?
I think so. It's like I said, it's more of an actual site now. You can view a lot more content, different videos and stuff like that. You know, a lot of viral videos and just funny pictures. It's kind of a mixture now. You know, there's still that platform where people can submit their stories and, you know, I'll rifle through those once a week and try to find the best one to feature. But you have to understand, like, when you run a site like this, the majority of stuff people send in is going to be pretty stupid. So you have to, you know, you have to pick and choose what you post.
So you have your standards. There are things you won't post?
Well, I mean, you know, some people will be like, I bleep bleep with Becky Sue and bleep bleep and then took her home, the end. You know what I mean? And it's like, bro, what am I supposed to do with this? You know, so I'm not going to post stuff like that. That's just a constant F-bomb. You know what I mean?
Right. Since you started this, what kind of reaction have you been getting, either from the general population or even from the media?
Most of the people I've talked to who have gotten referred to the site have all told me it's, you know, hilarious. A few female readers have been offended at some of the things, and that's fine. They're going to be, you know, it's 70% male-driven site, so we're going to do stuff that caters towards men. Women are going to find those things sexist sometimes. So I hear about that from time to time, but, you know, they get over it.
The site is regretfulmourning.com. How big do you think this can get?
How big do I think this could get? I'm not sure how big it could get. What are we comparing to?
No, what are your dreams and aspirations for this site? Let's put it that way.
We're doing about 1.5 million page views a month right now. It'd be nice if we saw between 5 and 10. And I think in the next year or so, we could definitely pull that off.
Well, it certainly is an interesting site, and we should mention the URL again. It's regretfulmourning.com. And we've been talking to creator Jason Pefley. And Jason, I thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Jason Pefley, the creator of the website regretfulmourning.com. You can check out the website, and if you forget it, or if you're too drunk to remember, you can just follow the links from my website at peteranthonyholder.com. I'm sure there are a lot of folks listening to this who have had a regretful morning. I myself have had none. Okay, there was that one day last month that I wasn't too crazy about, but let's not go there. Anyway, it's time to check the mailbag here on the Stuff File.
Incoming subspace signal.
And we start off with a piece of mail that came in from the blog site, actually, from someone who listened to this show last week. Bob sent via my blog at peteranthonyholder.blogspot.com. He said, "Sounds great. Nice to hear you without all the AM noise. I'm looking forward to hearing how this evolves as you break free from the habits and shackles of radio and discover all that the new media can offer both the producer and the listener. Enjoy this, have fun with it, and try to think of the Stuff File that you could or shouldn't do, and think of what's keeping you from doing that here." Well, I'll tell you what's keeping me from doing that here. Bob, you're not the first person who's brought this point up, and I gotta mention, I did that radio show for 20 years, and certainly in the last few years I was doing the show, say the last 10, there wasn't really anything I couldn't do on the show. And that's based on my own sensibilities. I'm not a person, for instance, who uses profanity, so there won't be any profanity on this show. We covered every kind of topic and issue on that radio show, and there was never any censorship in that regard. So from that perspective, there really isn't anything that I couldn't or shouldn't have done on the radio show that I personally wouldn't do. Because as far as my sensibilities are concerned, that radio show was as close to me as it could possibly get. And therefore, this podcast won't be much different than that. So if you're looking for explicit material on this podcast, it just ain't going to happen, because that's not the kind of guy I am. But I'm glad you're listening, and I hope you'll continue to listen.
Incoming subspace signal.
McKinley posted on my Facebook wall. He wrote a message. "I miss your humor polls, but the podcast is a great, incredible surprise of awesomeness." That's what he sent. Well, you'd be glad to know that I will be starting or restarting the humor polls in the month of October. So people will be able to go to my website and click on the front page and answer the poll question, which we will talk about here on the podcast. We'll start that in October.
Incoming subspace signal.
Valerie sent me an email. She said, you mentioned last week that you don't know how many shows you'll be doing here, but that you're optimistically using a four-digit number. This podcast, for instance, is 0002. Do you have any idea how many shows you did of Holder Tonight on the radio? Valerie, Valerie, Valerie. As I've said many times on the air and even on this podcast, I am anal retentive. I know exactly how many shows I've done. I did a grand total of 4,015 editions of Holder Tonight over the years on the air. 4015. Yes, I kept track of it because that's the kind of guy I am.
Incoming subspace signal.
I got another message from my blog. This, of course, from the blog, which is peteranthonyholder.blogspot.com. And this one comes from Bill. And Bill writes, well, Peter, once again, you're setting the bar a bit higher for yourself. We truly miss your show on the radio, and this Stuff File podcast is great. My wife and I wish you the best and are so pleased at being able to hear your show. We hope that you will be able to continue your podcast. We are thinking of bringing up the computer into the bedroom so that we can listen to you like we used to. So many people used to listen to the radio show in bed. It's a visual that, anyway, let's move on. Not going to happen, though, as far as moving the computer up to the bedroom is what Bill is talking about. We will just have to take our evening tea in the basement and listen to you there. Well, you know, you could always download the podcast, put it on an MP3 player, take that up to your bedroom. There are many ways of doing it. You can take the show now anywhere you want. It can leave your bedroom. It can go in your car. It can go with you when you go on walks. That's the joy of doing a podcast. You can download it and use it any way you want. And by the way, this podcast is now also available via iTunes, so you can find it there as well. It's all downloadable. And finally, one more from the mailbag.
Incoming subspace signal.
Angus sent me a note saying, now that you're on the net, will you upload your nephew's Christmas show from a couple of years ago, or is that program one that is owned by your former employers? Well, good news, Angus. I recorded and produced that Christmas special with the Little Rugrats at my home studio right here. Not only that, I was smart enough, or enough of a pack rat, or anal retentive, there it is again, to keep the master voice track of the kids when they were youngins, so I will actually re-edit the show, which I will do to excise a few call letters and things, at the beginning of December, and I will turn that show into one of the podcasts for this show, and you'll be able to have it for your very own as a downloadable version of what is one of the most irreverent, unchildren-children show done by children that you'll ever hear. And again, you can download that, and you'll find various ways of downloading it from my website, from my blog site, and also from iTunes. So, there you go. We will have more stuff from the Stuff File here on the Stuff File podcast with me, Peter Anthony Holder. And that includes an idiot of the day. But we have right now Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Cue the theme.
Now, Peter Anthony Holder once again brings you Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Lock up your daughters, and in West Virginia, your sheep. Joining Peter Anthony Holder is our intrepid embedded reporter, deep in the heartland of the U.S. of A., Stephen S. Walsh.
How you doing, Steve-a-rino?
Gosh, I'm happy, I'm cheerful, I'm having a heck of a good time. It's a wonderful day to be alive.
Okay.
I just felt like saying that.
Well, I'm glad to hear it.
Everything going well with you?
Everything's just tickety-boo.
I'm glad to hear that.
Just...
I really am.
Thank you.
Some people just say that.
What do you have for us this week, sir?
Oh, let's see. I think we're going to start right here where I live. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Dateline, Fulton, Missouri.
That'll be the show me state.
Yeah, I don't live in Fulton, but it's in Missouri, which is where I live.
I understand.
69-year-old Judy Davis single-handedly forced a plane to abort its landing after she allegedly went out onto the runway and fired a .22 caliber handgun at the plane. She later told investigators she was mad because the plane had repeatedly flown too close to her house. Of course, she was arrested and charged with unlawful use of a weapon. That's a good thing.
Have planes always been flying close to her house?
Apparently. But so, this one, you know, Peter, it's the old story about that proverbial straw that breaks the camel's back.
Gotcha.
This one kind of went too far.
I guess.
Dateline, Minneapolis, Minnesota.
That'd be the Gopher State.
Land of 10,000 lakes, if you prefer.
Okay.
53-year-old Eldridge Chapman. Sounds like a cat's name, doesn't it? Eldridge Chapman found himself in the wrong place at the wrong time, but it made him $495,000 richer.
How so?
Apparently, Chapman was walking down the hallway of his public housing building and going to his mailbox. That's when he ran into the middle of a police narcotics raid. For some reason, Officer Craig Taylor decided to punch Chapman in the face. Now, that led to the poor man having two brain surgeries due to bleeding in his head.
Ooh.
Chapman's lawyer, Bob Bennett, said there was no reason to use force on Chapman because he posed no threat to the officers and did nothing wrong. The city council publicly voted 12 to nothing to pay him a $495,000 settlement. That's nice, isn't it?
Yeah. Craig.
I wouldn't want to get whacked in the head, though.
No, I noticed Craig Taylor didn't get one single vote.
See what happens when you're not paying attention?
Exactly.
Dateline, Findlay, Ohio.
Oh, no, Ohio. I can hardly wait to say goodbye.
Oh, we haven't heard that music for a while.
Yeah, it's been a while, and probably a good thing that it has been a while.
Yeah.
I used to live there, you know.
I remember. That's the Buckeye State, by the way.
Yeah, you can't eat those things. They're dangerous.
What is a Buckeye?
It's a nut.
Now I see why you left Ohio.
Yeah, there are nuts in Ohio.
Okay.
What are the nuts and butts? A county commissioner says she was joking when she told a former county resident she wanted to castrate him and had the tools to do it. Oh, this is a good story. Jeff Davidson said Hancock County Commissioner Emily Walton, who's a veterinarian, by the way, made the comment to him during a heated telephone conversation over a neighborhood drainage issue. Davidson said the comment was unprofessional and that Walton should resign as commissioner. Walton said Davidson had been disrespectful on the phone to her and to women working in the commission office several times. She says the castration comment is one she's used for years and that people with half a sense of humor kind of understand that.
Also, you know, first of all, she said she wanted to castrate.
She didn't say she was going to.
She was
simply stressing her desire.
Exactly, and desires are not a crime. Well, some
are. Which brings up the old Ron Luciano comment, you know, the umpire?
Yes.
And the umpire strikes back. Earl Weaver said to him one time, "Can you throw me out of the game for what I'm thinking?" No. And he said, "Then I think you're a think of every foul word you can think of." And Luciano said, "I didn't have the heart to throw him out because he asked permission."
Good point.
Such is life, see?
Ron's books were great, by the way, and he was a great guy. Unfortunately, he's no longer with us.
I know. It was a pleasure to read.
Yeah.
What can I tell you?
Yeah.
Dateline, Fort Smith, Arkansas.
That'll be the natural state.
Or land of opportunity.
Or land of Bill.
True.
Yeah.
Two Oklahoma men have been arrested for allegedly playing a pornographic DVD on display televisions at a Fort Smith Walmart.
You notice everything happens at Walmart?
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can even go to a McDonald's at Walmart.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sebastian County Jail records show 20-year-old Cody Allen Sexton, and Kenny Dean Andrews were arrested on a felony obscenity complaint. Police said the two put the pornographic DVD into a player that was connected to six televisions on September 3rd. The DVD was removed after a customer notified a store manager. You might want to come and take a look at this. Dateline, Troutville, Virginia.
Troutville?
Trout, as in, let's go trout fishing.
Okay, that's the Old Dominion, is it not?
Sure is.
Yeah.
You know, an animal rights group wants to rent a prison building the state plans to close and turn it into the nation's first chicken empathy museum. A People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, that's PETA, an official from PETA, sent a letter to Governor Tim Kaine asking to rent the Botet Court Correctional Center building in Troutville. A Kaine spokeswoman said, "The state doesn't lease to private entities except for cases grandfathered in when it purchases buildings. PETA thinks a former prison is the ideal setting for exhibits on what it contends is mistreatment of chickens raised for slaughter. The museum also would have displays detailing chickens' habits and their intelligence. Note to PETA, when it comes to intelligence, chickens ain't got none.
The same could be said about PETA, but I digress.
Well, they'd be angry, and,
you know,
if I were a chicken, I'd be angry.
But you know, Steve, I have empathy for chickens.
Do you really?
Especially when they're on my plate.
Oh, I love them when they're on my plate.
Oh, God, yes.
Oh, chickens, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, that'd make me happy instead of angry, but I got to pretend I'm angry because I have to go into two-minute tirade mode.
Oh, dear, yes, I'm sorry, yes.
Okay, boy, am I ever angry. If I were a chicken, I'd be angry.
Okay.
And if I were an angry chicken and I had intelligence, which most chickens don't,
right,
then I would probably take keyboard and, what do they have, little paws? They're not paws, what do they call them, claws?
Claws, yeah.
Anyway, I take the keyboard and write a two-minute tirade, and that's what I'm going to do, Peter.
Tirade away.
If I may. You know, it's, I want to talk about those surveys tonight. Those surveys that ask you about your income. I fill out a lot of forms, many of them online, with a series of questions that I must answer in order to request something be sent to me or to fill out a required form for some benefit. After about 20 questions or so, the big question usually pops up, what is your household income? It'll then offer you several options, for example, $0 to $9,999, and then $10,000 to $24,999, $25,000 to $49,999, and so on. Many of these forms are going to offer you the option of answering, prefer not to answer, but others won't give you that option, and you'll not be able to jump to the next question until you give an answer. My answer, when given the option, is prefer not to answer. But what if that option isn't available? I'm not going to tell someone how much I earn, so do I hit the lowest point and suggest I have no income or pick the highest? Usually what I'll do is abandon the online filing and call the government agency or company to do the Q&A on the phone instead of online. This makes no sense, really, because it takes more time and effort, and it's really a pain in the butt. I'll try to tell the people on the other end of the line that I don't want to answer the question, and they'll tell me I must answer it. Given that, I'll tell them I earn $1 million a week, give or take $10,000. The astonishment on the other end of the line is deafening as the person asks for the information to be repeated, which I'm happy to do. Then the person's shocked. I'll then inform the person that while I would prefer not to answer, I was not given that option, so I'm making up an answer and they can take it or leave it. Why put people in this position to begin with? Unless you're the folks at the IRS or Revenue Canada in your neck of the woods, you have no need to know how much money I make. So stop asking, because you will not get the right answer.
Steve?
Yes?
Yeah, thanks for pointing out income to a person recently fired. Thanks.
I'm sorry. Need a loan?
It's okay. I have many moments now.
Okay, fine.
All I got are moments.
And that's why we're doing the show?
Lots and lots and lots of moments.
Lots of time in your hands, huh?
Oh, plenty of time.
Cool.
I might even open a chicken empathy museum. I don't know.
I think you should. It makes me happy to be alive.
The world is my oyster, and I don't even like oysters.
Okay, chicken. Let's make it your egg. Your egg.
There you go.
Yes.
Sir?
Yes?
Say those three magic words.
Hit the thing!
Hi, this is Ben Patrick Johnson, voiceover actor, male model, and all-around nice guy, some days. When I'm not voicing blockbuster movie trailers, TV promos, or doing charity work like this, I also write novels. I have four of them out, and I know, it's a gift. Anyway, my latest novel is actually my most personal. It's called If the Rains Don't Cleanse, which tells the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo, loosely based on my own parents. Everyone thinks you should read it, including me, of course. You can order it right now. It's just a mouse click away at Amazon.com or Amazon.ca. You'll find links for it, along with several reviews, on the podcast page at www.peteranthonyholder.com. Remember the title, If the Rains Don't Cleanse, by me, Ben Patrick Johnson. Buy a copy because, I got to be frank, doing voiceover liners for Peter Anthony Holder's podcast, it isn't exactly paying the bills. If the Rains Don't Cleanse. This is The Stuff File.
And we're almost done with this week's edition of The Stuff File podcast. A couple of stories to go, including the idiot of the day, so let's get right to it. You know, there are people out there with sex lives worse than you. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but if you ever felt that your sex life wasn't exactly what it should be, just remember, there are people out there worse than you. Danny Bronner, age 46, was indicted in Albuquerque, New Mexico in August for aggravated indecent exposure. A police officer and his 10-year-old son had seen Bronner with his pants around his ankles
performing simulated sexual intercourse against the trunk of his own car. The officer also said Bronner was shouting and swinging his arms as if he was enjoying the real thing. Wow. There's a guy who needs a date. And in jail, he might get one. Meanwhile, in Oslo, Norway, Andreas Yankov, a serious movie buff, has decided to make a name for himself, quite literally. The professional bus driver has legally changed his name to Julius Andreas Gimli Arne MacGyver Chewbacca Highlander Elisar Yankov. He says it's just the best way he can think of to pay tribute to his favorite movie heroes. His favorite films are Star Wars and Lord of the Rings, but he's a serious fan of the TV hit MacGyver. Something tells us Andreas hasn't been on a date for a very, very long time. Much like that first guy. Meanwhile, Keith Griffin, age 48, was arrested in Martin County, Florida in August for possessing child pornography on his computer. He tried to talk detectives out of an arrest by claiming that his cat often walks on the keyboard and must have stepped on some combination of keys that resulted in the downloading of about 1,000 images. Now, I've mentioned on this program time and time again that I'm not a fan of cats, and I will blame everything on cats, but this one is a bit of a stretch. That's all I'm going to say on that. Okay, time to get to this week's idiot of the day, and there are two of them.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff off presents the idiot of the day.
An unidentified 27-year-old woman in Joliet, Illinois, was filling up a gas can, a police report said, which was sitting on the passenger seat of the car. Dumb enough. But she then used a cigarette lighter to use as a light to observe how full the can was. By the time firefighters arrived, the car was approximately 5 feet from the gas pumps and fully involved in flame. The woman was hospitalized with non-life-threatening but serious burns, and her car was destroyed. Which, in a way, is kind of a good thing that her car was destroyed, because she's way too stupid to ever be allowed to drive again.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And we have another idiot of the day, so speak up once again, my young nephew Malik.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff off presents the idiot of the day.
They say clothes make the man, and in this case, a man was made by his unfortunate choice of wardrobe. Made by police, that is. 24-year-old Stephen Frederick Hamilton, who apparently is aggressively vying for the title of dumbest robber in the world, attempted to rob a few houses in Northern Ireland under the cover of darkness. Only problem, he was wearing a bright fluorescent safety vest at the time, which of course, even at night, made him pretty easy to spot. He was tracked down by police officers with the help of a police dog who chased him to a nearby supermarket parking lot. Judge Peter Gibson correctly called Hamilton's crimes as, quote, amateurish to the extreme, and gave him a 15-month jail sentence suspended for 3 years. Why would someone who wants to become a burglar at night wear a bright, fluorescent safety vest? Only one reason, and one reason alone. He's an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this week's edition of the Stuff File Podcast with me, Peter Anthony Holder. You can go to my website, peteranthonyholder.com, where you'll find information and links on our guests. On the What's On page, just look for the corresponding date and podcast number, in this case, podcast 0002. Email me at peter@peteranthonyholder.com. You could also find me on Facebook and Twitter. My Twitter account is twitter.com/PAHolder, and my Facebook account is facebook.com/PAHolder. And of course, the website, peteranthonyholder.com, and the email address, peter@peteranthonyholder.com. Thanks once again for being part of this podcast and listening in. Don't forget to tell all your friends. Go to iTunes, go to my website, go to my blog. You can download it and let everyone know it exists. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File podcast with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. While it may be an enjoyable, pleasant experience, some side effects may occur. Listening to Peter may cause bloating, drowsiness, Tourette's, web feet, or an oily discharge.